Ever get the feeling that in law, even the simplest cases can go
Oh,
sideways?
all the time.
Like, take this case, Cat 3 versus Black Lineage, trademark fight between Slamic HYPE and Flash HHYPE, you know?
Yeah, I remember that one.
Suddenly, bam, six-figure sanctions, all thanks to some messed up emails.
Seriously, altered emails. It's a classic example of how things can go wrong in e-discovery, and it's something that all law students really need to understand.
Absolutely. So today we're diving deep into what happened in Cat 3, what it means for handling digital evidence, and how the revised Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 37E plays into all of this, you know, ESI and all that.
Yeah, it's a big deal, especially since this rule was updated in 2015. In this case, Cat 3 is one of the early ones that really digs into those revisions.
Right, so let's start with the basics. We've got a trademark dispute, right? Slam XHYPE claims Flash HHHYPE is infringing. Standard stuff, you'd think.
Totally, pretty run-of-the-mill.
But then things get interesting during discovery, right? The defense starts noticing some weird stuff in the emails the plaintiffs are handing over.
And this is where forensic analysis comes in, right? They bring in the experts, start digging into the metadata. When were these emails created, modified, deleted, all that juicy stuff?
And what do they find?
Oh, they find that the plaintiffs had actually produced altered versions of some of their emails. Like they'd changed the domain addresses, you know, went from like at slamatsype.net to at slamlinks.com.
Tricky. And I bet the originals were nowhere to be found.
You guessed it. Deleted, vanished, poof.
So the big question is why? Why go through all that trouble to change some emails?
Well, the court was pretty straightforward about it. They said the plaintiffs were trying to make it look like they'd given the defendants notice about their trademark use way earlier than they actually did.
Oh, so they were trying to manipulate the timeline.
Exactly. It wasn't just a typo or a little fix, it was a deliberate attempt to change the story.
Wow, that's playing with fire.
Yeah. And it goes to the heart of evidence integrity. You know, courts have to trust that the information presented is accurate. When you start messing with that, the whole system breaks down.
Totally. So this is where Rule 37E comes in, right? This is all about what happens when ESI, that's electronically stored information, for those just tuning in, is lost or changed during a case.
Yeah, and the 2015 updates to that rule really gave courts more power to punish folks for messing with ESI.
Makes sense in our digital world and all. So, what are we looking at here? Two main scenarios, right?
Right.
You've got E, which basically says, hey, if you lose ESI because you weren't careful enough and we can get that info back somehow, maybe we'll just order some fixes.
Right, like if it was an honest mistake.
But then there's E2, and that's where things get serious. If the court thinks you intentionally screwed with the information to keep the other side from using it,
Oh, then you're in trouble.
big time. They can tell the jury to assume the lost info was bad for you or even keep you from using certain evidence. Heck, they could even throw out your whole case.
Yeah, the court wants to make sure everyone's playing fair.
And remember, Rule 37E isn't the only tool in the court's toolbox. They also have inherent authority to sanction parties for bad faith, even if it doesn't perfectly fit under 37E.
Right, they're not limited to just that rule. They can use their own judgment to protect the legal process. Like in Cat 3, the court said even if Rule 37E didn't apply exactly, they could still sanction the plaintiffs for messing with those emails.
So back to Cat 3, did the court think those altered emails were a big deal?
Absolutely. They said there was clear and convincing evidence that the plaintiffs had intentionally messed with them to get an unfair advantage.
And how'd they prove that?
Well, they had an expert witness, this guy named Mr. Kunkel, who testified that the way the emails were altered and deleted, it pointed to human action, not some random computer glitch.
Ah, so they couldn't just blame it on a tech issue.
Nope, and the plaintiffs couldn't come up with a good explanation either.
They try to argue that no info was actually lost, right? Because they still gave the other side a version of the emails.
Yeah, they tried that, but the court shut it down.
And why was that?
Because having multiple versions of the same email, especially when they contradict each other, just muddies the waters. It makes it way harder to figure out what really happened.
Makes sense. So the court wasn't buying their excuses.
Nope. And then you look at why they changed those domain addresses, you know, to make it seem like they'd given notice earlier. That goes right to the heart of their trademark claim.
So it wasn't just a harmless edit. It was a direct attempt to influence a key part of the case.
Exactly. And that's what made it so serious. So they found the intent, they found the prejudice. Now what? What were the consequences?
Well, the court hit them with a two-part sanction. First, they said, nope, you can't use those altered emails to try and prove you gave early notice. Basically, those emails were useless for that specific argument.
Right. They couldn't benefit from their manipulation. And then there was the financial hit, right?
Oh, yeah. The court said the plaintiffs had to pay the defendants costs for investigating this whole email mess and for bringing the motion for sanctions.
So we're talking attorney's fees, expert witness fees, all that. It can add up fast.
A costly mistake.
For sure. And it shows just how high the stakes are when it comes to handling digital evidence. One little edit can cost you big time.
Interesting, though, the court didn't completely nuke their case, right? Like, they could have dismissed it entirely, but they chose not to.
Yeah, they said the remedy should fit the wrong. So they acknowledged it was bad, but they also wanted to make sure the actual trademark dispute still got a fair hearing.
So they're trying to be fair, but also send a message.
Exactly. Don't mess with evidence.
So why are we still talking about Cat 3 all these years later? What's the takeaway for law students today?
It's important because it was one of the first big cases that really showed how courts were going to interpret the updated Rule 77E. It put everyone on notice, like, hey, we're serious about this ESI stuff. You tamper with it, there will be consequences.
So this case really set a precedent.
Absolutely. And think about it. Almost all evidence is digital these days. So understanding metadata, having a good system for tracking document changes, that's not just tech stuff. It's essential legal knowledge now.
It's like e-discovery 101.
For real.
And the practical advice here is simple. If you change ESI, even for what seems like a good reason, document it. Who changed it, when, why. Have a clear record.
Because if you don't, you're leaving yourself open to sanctions.
And it goes beyond just the rules, right? This is about ethics. We always talk about preserving evidence, but Cat 3 shows that preserving the integrity of that evidence, especially when it's digital, is just as important.
It's like we're taking those old school evidence rules and applying them to the digital age.
So Cat 3, not just a case, it's a lesson. Don't mess with digital evidence.
Seriously, it can come back to bite you.
Well said. But it makes you think, right?
Yeah.
What about those times when someone changes ESI without meaning to, without even realizing it? Maybe they didn't document it because they didn't think it was a big deal?
That's a tricky one. It might not be intentional, but could it still lead to sanctions? Especially after Cat 3, where the court made it so clear that they're taking ESI integrity very seriously. I think that's something all of us, especially those of us just starting out in law, need to really think about.
Definitely something to ponder. Well, on that note, thanks for joining us for another deep dive into the fascinating world of e-discovery. Until next time, stay safe out there in the digital world.
And keep those ESI logs updated.
You bet.